Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the Sunday show on Here Be Monsters. We have a great guest today. His name is Steve Elliott, and he pretty well posts just about everything you see over at tokesignals.com and is an author. And we'll get to him. We're going to play you a little ditty before we get into it. So give us a listen for a second here. It's just a couple of minutes. It's something old.
And there doesn't seem a way that she won't come and lose my mind. It's too easy humming songs to a girl in yellow dress. It's been a long time since the party, and the room is in a mess. Before kings of Eam, I am sitting stately on the floor. There are birds out on the sidewalk and a ballet at the door. He reminds me of a penguin with few and plaster hair, talcum powder. I've been waiting for an hour, I can't find a place to hide. The being known as Wonder Girl is speaking, I believe. It's not easy trying to tell her that I shortly have to leave. Why don't you be like me? Why don't you stop and see? Why don't you hate who I hate you? Why kill to be free?
Scows get.
Yeah, you got it. I'm
1967,
surprised.
Right about this time of year it came out on the only Monkees album that never yielded a hit single. Instead, it was their first album to not feature a hit single, and it still sold real well for them.
I liked it better than the rest. Steve, are you familiar with that one?
I thought I was reasonably familiar with the Monkees catalog, but I guess that is deep catalog because I drew a blank on it. I had to Google lyrics to find out.
That's their third album. I believe it was at the end of one side there, and it was Monkees Headquarters is what they called
it.
Yeah, yeah. My sister had a couple of Monkees albums, but that wasn't one of them, so I guess that's how I missed out on that song.
Sure, no problem. Well, it goes back a long time, too, so you can't fault you for not recalling it.
You like to do the strange and unusual, right?
Oh, yeah.
I do love Off the Beaten Path.
I never imagined we'd hear a Monkees tune on this show, so that's interesting.
Hey, whatever's good, you know? I want to welcome you, Steve, to the show, and thank you for coming and spending some time with us today to talk something that is really, really important. It's important, and I haven't even libated. It's important. It's actually important to industry. It's important to medicinal applications. It's important all round, and that's the legalization of cannabis. I think that's your mainstay, isn't it, Steve? Talk to me.
Yes, it is. This plant has been a part of human culture for at least 12,000 years, according to the people that study such things. And we've had a very productive and mutually beneficial relationship with it until at least 1937, when the first anti-cannabis laws were passed at the urging of ex-alcohol prohibitionist named Harry J. Anslinger. Well, he feared that he was going to be out of a job if he didn't have something new to fight since alcohol prohibition had been lifted.
Mm.
And what he came up with was the marijuana menace. And that time, we here in the United States and across the world, since we encouraged everyone else to pass similar laws, have had these marijuana laws on the books, and there have been a lot of people who have been victimized as a result.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people went and spent needless time in jail over something relatively harmless.
Jack?
Yeah, look. I'm still here. I heard an echo, but it's situational, I guess. Yeah, a lot of people spent time in jail needlessly for that. And remember that crazy film from the 1930s, Reefer Madness? That was insane. That was so full of lies, it wasn't even funny.
Yeah, the film was so bad, in fact, that as we know, it made the rounds years later as a novelty item, and it would be like a late show treat for people who had maybe been taking part in a little marijuana. I remember when it made the film circuit in the 70s under those conditions, and actually there were some pretty enthusiastic crowds at some of those showings.
Yeah. I remember seeing it in the local theater here when I was in high school in the late early 70s, and we laughed our butts off at it.
Well,
yeah,
by then it was kitsch.
Yeah.
For the most part, I think it was rather kitsch at about that time, wasn't it, Steve?
Right.
Yes, it was definitely the kitsch appeal at that time, and it was just... I remember just a total laugh fest at the showings that I attended. Unfortunately, though, the upshot of that movie and of the attendant media hysteria that happened in 1936 and 37 was the passage of the Marijuana Tax Act. And what it did was effectively illegalize marijuana by imposing an impossibly high tax on the plant. Because at that time... Congress recognized that it had no real way to illegalize a plant.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of an odd concept when you think about it, making a part of nature illegal. So they took the roundabout way of imposing the high tax. And that is the way that marijuana was suppressed for the next 35 or so years until President Nixon instituted the modern-day war on drugs about 1971.
Yeah.
And when that happened, Congress actually passed a law at that point against marijuana itself rather than just the tax act. So we've been operating under that scheme ever since. They included marijuana on a Schedule One, which is supposed to be the most dangerous drugs of all, those that have no medical applications whatsoever and high potential for abuse. Marijuana is right up there beside heroin and LSD on Schedule 1, whereas you have cocaine and methamphetamine down on Schedule 2. So if you're inclined to accept drug advice from our federal government, you will note that they believe cocaine and methamphetamine are safer than marijuana.
It's just
crazy.
Well,
all I can say is all throughout history there's been a lot of bull about marijuana, about how it supposedly automatically leads to higher, more dangerous drugs. I smoked so much pot. From 1973 to maybe 1981 or two, I was constantly high, many times a day, and I hardly ever went without unless there wasn't any to be had in the area. And, you know, my early memories are still intact. I don't have any problem with that. I never once did heroin or anything else. It was a bunch of lies.
You know, there's an ironic thing about a lot of those lies they tell about pot, and that gateway theory that you mentioned is one of those. The ironic thing is that oftentimes, and including in this case, the exact opposite is true. What we found, rather than the gateway theory, which, of course, they did pound away at that back a few years ago, that's been largely discredited by scientific studies.
Good.
What we have found is that recovering drug addicts from actual harmful hard drugs like meth, coke, alcohol, heroin, they have found that using cannabis helps them wean themselves off of the substance that they are actually trying to quit. And
oh,
that some of the addicts, against conventional wisdom, have found that if they do a marijuana maintenance program, they call it, that they can keep from doing their drug of addiction. That is actually a very promising area of research in more enlightened circles when it comes to drug recovery, rather than the doctrinaire approach that if you have abused any substance at any point, you shouldn't do any mood alterant whatsoever. There are more and more cases where people have said they found it useful in that regard.
Well,
a lot of people have been, well, not a lot of people, a lot of psychotherapy, groundbreaking psychotherapy with pharmaceuticals. Well, the pharmaceuticals that they're using is the like the Amazonian tea or the Peruvian tea, ayahuasca, to help people to break free of dangerous chemical addictions like methamphetamine and heroin abuse too, which heroin is not a synthetic, but it can be molded into synthesis too, very easily, and used to get high with. Does anybody know what the basis is of the very addictive the painkiller that they've been giving out these days? Instead of Percodans or Vicodin, they give you those very, very illegal down here in Florida now.
Oxycodone?
Personally, I can't go near it. It makes me sick. It makes me absolutely ill, more ill than the pain I'm in, you know?
Well, a lot of people addictive have that reaction. People have been using it like mad illegally across the country, and they've been flocking to Florida for a long time to buy it legally, but I guess that's stopped now, huh?
Well, it's not really stopped. Unfortunately, we have a governor down here who's sort of crossed between. He owns a lot of pharmaceutical industry, and he put the kibosh on closing the pain clinics up. But then his integrity was called into question when he did that, so now he's having to lift that back. So there's been a halt and then a progression forward. Still, the pill mills are out there. They're handing out bags of you know, prescriptions to people who drive over the state line, come down here for it. But but the point is, and how it all goes back to marijuana, is that people who get caught with something like oxycodone get a slap on the wrist. There is no justice in the court system anymore in this country.
There simply isn't.
And I'm not just talking about drug charges either. But
up until recently, I think, and maybe even still today, if you're caught with a small amount of marijuana, you can end up in jail in Texas for 20 years.
Yeah.
How preposterous is that?
Louisiana is the same way, and several other states as
God.
Well.
Yeah, that's terrible. Steve, if I could ask, are you a member of or are you affiliated with NORML in any way, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws?
I work with NORML as in being a journalist and getting news from them.
Okay.
I first joined NORML back in 1977, actually. I was 17 years old and got busted for the first time for pot, and I actually tasted some consequences at that point of the crazy pot laws, and I decided maybe some action was called for, that I had to make a stand of some kind.
Sure.
So what I ended
up
doing was writing into NORML and sending my membership dues in and joining up with them for the first time.
Yeah, okay. Great. And then you went on to pursue a career in journalism, is that correct?
I did, yes. I went into journalism, and for years I worked in newspapers in Mississippi, did some work in graphics for a few years related to that, and ended up on the West Coast doing a couple of automotive magazines, trade magazines within the automotive industry.
Okay.
After doing that for a few years, I ended up moving up here to the Pacific Northwest and started blogging about politics, particularly left politics, including drug policy.
Right.
What that did was attract the attention of the Village Voice media chain, who asked me, based upon my personal blog, Reality Catcher, it was called, they asked me if I would blog on the San Francisco Weekly's website a couple times a week about marijuana.
Okay.
I agreed to do that, and in 2009, late 2009, November, Village Voice Media decided they were going to launch a national pot blog, and it was called Toke of the Town. And since I was already affiliated with the organization writing about pot, they asked me if I wanted to edit the thing. I jumped at the chance and edited Toke of the Town from November 09 until January of this year, at which point I went out on my own with the blog tokesignals.com. During that 3+ years at Toke of the Town, though, another Village Voice Media paper, Seattle Weekly, locally here to me, decided they were going to have the second marijuana reviewing position of a major newspaper in the United States. Denver Westward was the first with their marijuana reviewer. Seattle Weekly decided they were going to be the second. So, of course, since I was both local and a known quantity and already working for Village Voice, they asked me if I wanted to do that. And that was a no-brainer for me. I definitely wanted to visit all the dispensaries and check out their best strains and write about what I found.
Wow.
So that started up about 2.5 years ago now, and is still going in the Seattle Weekly every week. That is called Toke Signals, those marijuana dispensary reviews. I review both the customer service aspect of these establishments and the medicine itself. I assess the quality and the effectiveness of the medicine for pain, for nausea, for appetite stimulant, for sleep aids, and I basically tell people what they can expect, the prices they can expect to pay when they go in these places, and it's met with an appreciative audience. People tell me that it actually helps. I remember when I first got my medical marijuana authorization, I guess about 6 or 7 years ago now, I felt totally lost within this new culture, because while I had been a recreational pot user and had bought marijuana on the black market, I didn't know anything about the medical side of it and how you would become a member of a collective, how you would visit a dispensary, how you would select appropriate strains to address your symptoms. So I knew that people in a similar position to mine might feel as lost as I did. So I thought that it was a good chance to maybe give a hand to people like that and kind of point them in a few directions that might help them out as they're
Very beneficial.
World.
Very good.
It is beneficial. And can you just everything that you're posting in the Seattle news? Well, does it also go up onto tokesignals.com?
When Toke Signals, the Seattle Weekly column, started in February 2011, someone suggested to me, you know what, it might be a really good idea for you to buy that domain, tokesignals.com. And I thought, you know, that does sound like a good idea. So I bought it then, and I kind of kept it in my back pocket and didn't do anything until this past January, when Village Voice Media, Toke of the Town, and I came to our parting of the ways. At that point, within a week of leaving Toke of the Town, I was reactivating that URL, tokesignals.com, and starting up that website. The content, though, is independent of and separate from my Seattle Weekly work. Since I was the guy who came up with Toke Signals as the name of my column for Seattle Weekly, that was my intellectual property, so I was free to go ahead and use it on the website itself, and Seattle Weekly didn't mind. I actually had the email where we were brainstorming about names for the marijuana review column in the Seattle Weekly, and I said, how about Toke Signals? So luckily I had saved that email and could show where I'm the guy that thought of it. So I was free to go ahead and use Toke Signals as the name of my website, too.
Well, great.
Intellectual property has become a huge issue, hasn't it?
Oh, yes.
It has, and I had actually run into that once on the way to establishing my independent website when I left Village Voice Media. A friend of mine, Kim G. Publisher, had the domain thepodcast.com. And she and I had already knocked around the idea of my doing a cannabis-themed podcast and calling it The Podcast and doing a website as a tie-in and doing my news items like I had done on Talk of the Town. So we decided at that point that we were going to try that. But what we quickly ran into was that there were a couple of guys out in California who had trademarked The Podcast, the name, and they got an injunction to keep us from using that. So the next thing my mind turned to was that TokeSignals.com domain name that I owned, and I ran it by Kim. She loved it, and we ran with it.
Great.
Well, That's Kim from AWOP Radio, who's a great Kim friend of Here Be Monsters and all our shows here.
Kim rocks, and AWOP Radio rocks. I love her work.
Yeah, absolutely. She has the best intentions for the planet, and I don't know how else to put it, because her embrace of getting so many projects going and out there and running is pretty incredible. She does a lot.
I wish there were a million of her.
We need a lot. Well, she needs a million of her around her right now. She needs kind to help herself. I think though, I have a question for you, Steve. Has it bullseyed you to write about marijuana, its medicinal purposes, effects, and the reviews that you do, and to talk about its legalization, both online and in the news? Has it bullseyed you by any of the legal authorities?
Sometimes, in my more paranoid moments, I think so. But so far, I have been very lucky in that regard. I can tell you that I don't take foolish risks because of that. If I were just some anonymous citizen who wasn't saying in print with a big audience every day sometimes uncomplimentary things about law enforcement and the methods they employ in the war on drugs, then I wouldn't feel that way, and I do sometimes. But what it does is it just makes me more careful and more conscious of things that can happen if you don't go, you know, strictly by the guidelines and the limits we have here. Fortunately, as a patient in Washington State, we have a good law here in Washington. I'm allowed to have up to a pound and a half of marijuana and 15 plants under our medical marijuana law in Washington State.
Well,
I'm nowhere near either one of those at any time. So, you know, as long as I mind my P's and Q's, I'm okay under state law. There's always federal law. And, you know, of course, marijuana is illegal for any purpose in any amount under federal law.
Right.
But so far, the Obama administration has chosen not to go after individual patients, knock on wood. Now, that could change with a change in administration. It could change with a change in policy by this administration, because they have shown that they are willing to go after dispensaries, even in medical marijuana states where it is legal. So, you know, it's kind of an uncertain situation. It's something that, in my opinion, sick people shouldn't have to be worrying about when they're already fighting sometimes potentially life-threatening diseases.
Right.
But it's an unfortunate political reality right now that we have some very regressive and very draconian, in many cases, laws against marijuana on the federal level.
Yeah. Steve, I know for a fact that medical marijuana helps reduce nausea in chemotherapy patients, because my youngest brother is suffering from terminal esophageal cancer. It's recently just spread to his brain, but while he was on chemotherapy, he had the worst nausea, and he did resort to using medical marijuana illegally, as it turned out, but he still was able to use it, and it helped him immensely. So I know it works very, very well. Let's talk a little bit about the dispensaries, and you know a lot about them. I don't. I would imagine California is probably the most prevalent dispensary state. Is that correct, or am I wrong?
As far as sheer number of dispensaries, I would say you're almost certainly correct, because it's a big state and a big population, and they have a law there that, you know, until recently, has allowed in many districts the proliferation of dispensaries. What they have now with a recent Supreme Court decision, though, and I'm glad you brought this up, is that the California Supreme Court has ruled that municipalities can ban dispensaries locally, a lot of cities are going to do that now that they have kind of that clearance from the Supreme Court to do it. I think something between 150 and 200 cities statewide already had done that prior to this Supreme Court decision, but that trickle could become a flood. And I think that this is actually a serious danger here for safe access for a lot of patients, especially in the inland areas of California and in the more rural areas. Some of those patients might have some driving to do if they want to have safe access, unless they're willing to grow it themselves or access the black market, which we shouldn't ask sick people to do.
Right, exactly.
Steve,
now,
how about the number of dispensaries nationwide? For just 1 minute, could I interrupt? I really would like to know, Steve, what in California is going on that is pushing this? Why is it being pushed out? Why are the dispensaries being closed? What's behind that?
What we have, and this is my opinion, is an unresolved culture clash that is left over from the cultural battles of the 1960s.
Uh-huh.
I think that we have a lot of people who still fear marijuana and fear the people who choose to use it, even medicinally. I think that people are holding on to some negative stereotypes about marijuana and the people who use it, and that they are unwilling, in some cases, unfortunately, to let go of the things that they were taught as children about cannabis and the people who use it. I think that as time goes on, that this segment of the population is going to represent a smaller and smaller proportion of people, and that eventually the laws are going to reflect that more fully than they do now. But unfortunately, what we have right now is people who are reacting to marijuana as if it were a bigger threat than in reality it represents.
Based on craziness they'd heard beforehand. How many dispensaries are there in how many states? Do you know that, Steve?
I don't have a number for total dispensaries. I do know that it would be in the thousands because, typically there are reportedly several hundred in L.A. alone.
Oh, my.
So,
okay.
You know, you can work from there. And I know personally in Seattle, for example, where I have the most direct personal knowledge, I've been in more than 100 dispensaries in Seattle myself.
And how many states allow these dispensaries? Do you know that? Currently,
I think of the we are up to 19 medical marijuana states right now, and I'm thinking there are about 11 or 12 of those where dispensaries exist to a greater or lesser degree of official acceptance. You have gray areas. Mm-hmm. Oregon, for example, they passed their medical marijuana law in 1998, the same year Washington did. Mm-hmm. But they have an explicit prohibition of sales for profit in Oregon. Patients are allowed to give marijuana to each other. Mm-hmm. They're allowed to reimburse each other for the costs of cultivating it. But if it crosses the line into anything that seems like a retail sale, at that point, you know, they immediately enter a legal gray area and possibly enforceable area. So it's kind of an odd situation there in Oregon. So the dispensaries that you do have, and there are quite a few that I personally know of, don't want to call themselves dispensaries and don't want to talk to many people about it because of that precarious legal position.
Yeah.
So, you know, do you include those in the total or not? And how do you count them when they won't stand up and be counted?
Mm-hmm.
In Colorado, they have hundreds of these clinics, and Colorado has been legalized, and we have one of our folks who's in Colorado in the room, Janelle Green, and she's saying that in Colorado, the limit per day is 2 ounces unlimited edibles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, edibles.
Edibles are cool, man.
I remember my days with the brownies.
They're actually, for a while there, I was doing it and may restart on the Seattle Weekly's website, a Medibles review column called Incredible Medibles, and they were publishing that in the Voracious Food Blog of Seattle Weekly. So that was really fun because every week I would get to try a new one review both, you know, the taste and everything, as well as the effects.
They make some incredible. I've had some incredible edible Mary Jane, and it's been very medicinal. It's also been, you know, for my own enjoyment. I've enjoyed marijuana butter, and that's an incredible thing on corn. Just made fresh corn. I've had marijuana potato chips or homemade kettle chips with marijuana. And we have a connoisseur in the chat room. I wish you'd call in and talk it up. I love hearing about it. But the thing is too, popcorn is a biggie also. I was wondering, Steve, I saw on the front page of Toke Signals, wonderful piece that you just wrote about the boomers and the culture that is shifting before our eyes. I mean, it's globally shifting. I would also, because I know that I can think of several friends, because I cannot drink as often. I work with essential oils, and I work with plant medicines, you know. I can't poison my system with alcohol, but I can enjoy, we'll just say, you know. a lot of people, I'm just below or away from boomer, that generation. However, I've noticed that a lot of my friends have gone completely to just toking, basically. That's it. I just toke. Occasionally I might have a drink with a friend if it's a special occasion, but other than that, that's just where it's at. And I noticed this wonderful article on your front page, and I wish you'd address that. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I've noticed more and more of my friends as well, and I think part of it is just a life experience thing. You know, when you've gone through the experience a few times of maybe overindulging a little bit in alcohol and feeling pretty crappy the next morning, sometimes you just choose to say no thank you to that the evening before rather than to go through that again. And when there's no obvious punishment the next morning, that is to say, with something like marijuana, then you're a little more inclined to do that than to do something that you know is going to make you feel bad. I think that, as well, a lot of people have become aware of the health effects of using marijuana compared to those of using alcohol. And it really is true that cannabis is a lot safer than alcohol, and it is much easier on your body.
Yes.
And in my opinion, it's more fun, too.
Well, no, it's a healing plant. Marijuana is a healing plant. It's not a destructive plant. And I know there are those folks that I had a good friend who was he made surfboards, and then he did glass. He glassed all the bars through the Caribbean, you know, polyurethane glassing. And he would wake and bake every day. And that's just how his lifestyle was, and he was very happy with it. And he was extraordinarily healthy. He is no longer with us, but it's not because he waked and baked nearly every day.
You know, the fascinating thing about marijuana and the reason that it has so many different medical effects on the body, I mean, someone who was uninformed about it might say, look, you're saying it does this many different things and it helps you address this many different serious conditions. It must be snake oil. Well, that's not the case. What is happening here is that each of us has something called an endocannabinoid system. This is a part of every human being and, in fact, of every mammal on the planet. And what this endocannabinoid system is a series of receptors that are found throughout the human body. They have their greatest concentration in the brain, but there are also many, many of them in the liver, in the intestines, and in the reproductive organs, throughout the body, you will find a few of these cannabinoid receptors. And the reason they are called endocannabinoid receptors is that our body manufactures these cannabinoids. They regulate a lot of important processes, including mood and appetite. And they are found naturally in the body. The reason that marijuana works in the ways that it does in the human body and in the human mind is that it matches this natural chemical that is already found in our bodies, and it binds to those cannabinoid receptors in the brain and throughout all those other organs in the body. That's why marijuana not only makes you feel high when it's connecting to those receptors in your brain, but say you're a Crohn's patient and you're suffering mightily from your intestinal pains, from the abdominal pain that, that racks you every day, suddenly you feel better. That's not just because you're high, like some skeptics would claim. It's because that those cannabinoids found in cannabis, the phytocannabinoids, they would be called, in contrast to the endocannabinoids that are found naturally in your body, they are binding to the receptors that are found directly in your intestines. They are going to the source of the pain, and they are addressing it very directly and very effectively. It's,
yeah,
it's a fascinating subject, and we've only known for, I think, just about a decade now about these cannabinoid receptors, and it is one of the most promising areas of medical research.
Steve,
very
what
interesting,
is the
you know,
difference between THC and CBD?
They are both members of the cannabinoid family that occurs naturally in the cannabis plant. I personally believe that the whole plant cannabinoids, that all of them working in concert, like a symphony, has the best health effects. I believe for that reason that consuming herbal organic cannabis, whether you eat it, smoke it, vaporize it, or use it as a topical, is the best for us. Now, the different cannabinoids in cannabis, the two major ones are the ones you mentioned, THC, which is associated with producing the high and also is a potent anti-inflammatory and appetite stimulant, and CBD, which is an even more potent anti-inflammatory and anti-pain agent without producing the high associated with THC. Now, it turns out, though, that the two things work well together. CBD moderates the psychoactive effects of THC and makes them actually less startling to someone who might not be used to the effects of marijuana.
It's almost, you're saying almost that the plant itself is an intuitive plant in the human body.
I would actually say that the plant does go to where it is needed in the human body. And, you know, whether we can derive some ontological deeper meaning from that, and I'm inclined to on some days, I don't know. But I do know that there is this kind of synergistic relationship between the cannabinoids in marijuana and where they are needed in the body.
Incredible,
very interesting,
isn't it?
I was always under the impression that medical marijuana was used only for cancer patients or chemotherapy patients. I had no idea that it was so widely used for other maladies as well. That's very interesting.
It's pretty amazing. And people who are interested to see just the vast range of uses for which there have been actual medical studies, in many cases double-blind medical studies, they can access a bunch of that information at one place if they will Google Granny Stormcrow's list. Granny Stormcrow is a lady that compiles these medical studies that have found various conditions and symptoms for which marijuana works into one vast list. And it runs hundreds of pages and thousands of studies at this point. So anyone who wants to educate themselves about the many, many medical studies that have proven marijuana to be medicine, Granny Stormcrow's list is a good place to start.
Are you familiar with the vibrational remedies or the homeopathy of flower essences, Dr.
To a certain extent, yes. I have like a layman's acquaintance with that without certainly being an expert in it.
This is part of my job, what I do. I have a large catalog that I've made across the country of different flowers. And I work with marijuana and the ayahuasca plants that go into the ayahuasca tea. It's my job to create the vibrational remedy. And the marijuana, including fungus and all kinds. The marijuana essence I use in a rescue remedy. And it works wonderfully. It's helped me several times, especially with backaches, to release and relax. There's all kinds of different applications, and it's not just the, you know, the physical. It's also the subtle, is what I'm saying, Steve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a very, very promising area within just what you're talking about when it comes to cannabis and using it as a healing agent. And those are the terpenes, the aromatic agents found within the mature female flowers of the marijuana plant. They're responsible for those distinctive smells, in some cases skunk-like, in some cases a lemony smell or a blueberry, the various strains that you have of marijuana. Mm-hmm. And I have seen some really, really promising new studies that are downright exciting that posit that these terpenes potentiate the medically beneficial effects of the cannabinoids in ways that we don't completely understand yet, but which might be akin in some ways to aromatherapy.
Well, and rendering an essence of what I call an absolute, because I solvent extract an oil from marijuana, and I can never afford enough anymore to really come up with a great deal, so I basically get about, I'd say maybe a dram's worth is a large yield for me, and I disperse it into a macerated oil base. This stuff is incredible. I put it into my sweetgrass oil and give it to people who are needing it for certain ailments or healing. I mean, it speeds the repair on muscles. I watched that happen with my nephew.
I've seen this too.
It does incredible things. I would just love to be able to legally distill and extract the oil from the plant from several different varieties, because I think, like you're saying, Steve, that different strains of the plant have different properties to bear and be used medicinally.
Yes. They really do, and sometimes patients, as they are exploring different strains, will find one that really effectively addresses their symptom set. For example, there is a strain called AFGU available here in the Seattle shops that I find quells my nausea and pain more quickly than almost any other strain I've found. And it reliably does this particular strain. It has a distinctive smell and appearance to it, so I know when I've got the real thing. Mm-hmm. And it's great to know that there is a strain I can go to that I know will go straight to the source and help my medical symptoms. Mm-hmm. That is a really promising area, and I think if people were just allowed to experiment with making their own oil the way you're talking about, that this would advance even more quickly. It's a real shame that folks aren't allowed to do this kind of thing to help themselves. I think as long as we have enormous profits, as they are right now being channeled into Big Pharma, the huge pharmaceutical corporations, they're going to be very jealous about that money.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact,
the day you're going to see a big change is when Big Pharma is allowed to or can convince the government to sponsor them in the exploration of this type of medicine therapy. You're going to see a booming increase in the amount of medical marijuana that's legally available and widespread availability because of that. I'm sure of that.
That's a process that is already starting.
Yeah, the dispensaries are welcoming them in Colorado, according to Janelle.
Right.
My concern is that if some of these big corporations get an idea of the magnitude of profits that are available from the medical marijuana market,
mm-hmm.
that the way they will attempt to avail themselves of those is to have marijuana downscheduled from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2 or 3.
Mm-hmm.
That would mean that it is available only by prescription as a controlled
mm-hmm.
substance.
And
they would market it as the Marinol pills, which are available on the market right now. They're pure THC. But for many patients, since they only have that one cannabinoid, THC, they don't address their symptoms as effectively as herbal marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And the other way they've already marketed it in Europe and Canada and seen in the United States is as an oral spray called
mm-hmm.
Sativex. And it is half THC and half CBD and
mm-hmm.
has been found effective by some MS patients, I understand, in the UK and in Canada.
Okay.
So what that would do, I think, at least in the minds of Big Pharma, is provide a way for them to say, look, for those who need medical marijuana, this is an accepted pharmaceutical way to get that. We've
mm-hmm.
got the pills, we've got the spray, and
right.
if you need these substances, then that's the legal way you're going to do them. And
well, they're
going to
try and dominate the market like they do with everything else. They're going to try and ruin it just like they do with everything else, too.
Right, right. They're going to go after the mom-and-pop medical marijuana shop
right.
down the street who sells
mm-hmm.
you the flowers of the marijuana plant. And
mm-hmm.
they're going to say, look, that's dangerous. We don't know who grew that or what's in it. You
yeah.
need to just get these pills and these sprays from us.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about that is those pills and those sprays, as I mentioned, aren't as effective as the flowers. Because the flowers contain the complete spectrum of cannabinoids, especially if it is
right.
a medically bred strain that, you know, people have worked hard developing these strains
mm-hmm.
that most effectively address the symptoms of patients. And
yeah.
you literally have, at this point, generations of work that
mm-hmm.
have gone into these strains.
Mm-hmm.
And the thought of some big company coming in and commandeering the rich genetic legacy of marijuana.
Right.
There you go.
Me. And if
yeah.
you have a Monsanto that decides
oh.
they're going to come in and genetically engineer different
oh.
types of marijuana plants and then patent those and hold the
yeah.
patent and control the future of this plant. That is not something that we can ever find acceptable.
No,
how
that's horrifying.
How can you, this it's so beyond me how you can patent Mother Nature. I mean, it's just, it's bad. It's
well, you need a friendly Supreme Court to aid you, you know.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you know, the tendrils of a company like Monsanto and of a lot of these big pharmaceutical companies reach so deeply into our government through the campaign
lobbying.
Contributions and through these
mm-hmm.
favors and these backroom deals
oh, yeah.
that we often have people who are calling themselves public servants, yet when the rubber meets the road, they are acting more like employees of
oh,
these
yeah.
large
they've
corporations.
They've been privatized.
Well,
so that
yeah.
concerns me. I know, and at this point, the big pharmaceutical companies know, and almost everybody is coming around to knowing, that cannabis has all of these exciting potentialities as a medical treatment,
mm-hmm.
and as not just a medical treatment, but in many ways, you could think of it as a form of health supplementation. Since we have this
yeah.
natural cannabinoid
yeah.
system in our
yeah.
bodies, we're supplementing mm-hmm. our cannabinoid systems and keeping ourselves healthy in ways
sure.
that we are only just beginning to understand. But what we already
mm-hmm.
do know is that THC, CBD, and the other cannabinoids are potent anti-tumor agents. They prevent
mm-hmm.
the formation of cancerous
right.
tumors
right.
in the body.
Mm-hmm.
This, according to scientific studies.
Yeah.
So, more and
yeah.
more people are coming to find out that if they indulge in marijuana, not only are they not endangering themselves, but they may be doing themselves a favor when it comes to their health.
Yeah.
And in many ways.
These natural medicines, what I'm hoping is that the people who are on the ground floor right now of growing and dispensing medical marijuana, the ones who have actually spent the time learning the horticulture of cannabis, are taking the seeds and they're preserving and curing them and getting them put aside so that if anything does happen that, you know, there will be a supply of of clean strains of the plant, you know, because
that is a great idea.
It's this is something I think about with a we go out Walton Forsher just in the chat room has said there is huge research proving psilocybin has potential to eradicate depression. Well, hell yeah. I mean, you know, especially in chocolate. But the point is, you go out and collect spores and you put them into stasis and you hold on to them because you can't be, especially with what they're growing in anymore with the bovine growth hormones and all the things they feed to the cows. I mean, I go out, well, I better keep my mouth shut now, right? Okay.
Well, but I'm with you all the way on that, Gwen.
That's another homeopathy that I've worked on creating from tincture down to minuscule to a homeopathic application of it, a vibrational. And it's a strong remedy. It's also a strong remedy as a tincture, too. And, of course, rendering it the way traditionally it's rendered. You know, if we don't go and preserve, look what they're doing, you know, to the rainforest. So, Steve, what's the chance that the growers, that there's any kind of a growers union on the down low?
I think that if we are going to survive as a community and as a culture, there has to be some kind of cooperative effort in that regard.
Yeah.
Now, I think there are already below the radar associations of growers that are determined to preserve the genetic legacy of the cannabis plant.
There you
go. There are a lot of people who wouldn't accept any other outcome. So I just know that we have to remain steadfast in our determination that this be allowed to continue as a mom-and-pop industry and not just as a big pharma operation.
And
that's why I believe it is so
numbers
crucial.
Of like-minded people grow and continue to grow.
Yes.
I believe it is crucial for that very reason that
moving forward, as we pass medical marijuana laws in more states, that we get back to passing laws that include home cultivation. It concerns me greatly that in the past few states that have passed medical marijuana laws, including New Jersey, there is no allowance for home cultivation by patients.
There is
no good reason to stop people from growing their own medicine.
There is
no good reason to force them to buy their medicine from state licensed stores when they can grow it for themselves. Patients can grow medicine in safe, organic ways. They can avoid using chemical fertilizers. They can baby those plants and grow them just the way they want them. There's no reason to tell a sick person you can't do that. Besides the obvious.
Yeah, and if you can grow your own carrots without any problem or regulation, you ought to be able to do the same.
The medicine effects you would have, the therapeutic effects of growing a plant.
Right.
That is thrown in there for good measure. So I can't see any reason to not allow people to grow their own pot.
I'm with you on that. You know, we used to say back in our heavy marijuana usage days of college and just beyond, we used to say marijuana would become legal in this country only when the amount of legislators that is imbibed in marijuana and currently uses marijuana grows to the point where it's a majority, and we haven't reached that yet, but I still believe
it. I've got one thing to say about that, buddy. We got a guy sitting in the White House right now that's got his picture out there toking and admits to it during college, and this guy is a serious SOB, okay? He's a corporate fella. And, I would take a stoner's integrity like an outlaw's integrity over any kind of government integrity any longer.
It just
isn't there anymore.
Unfortunately, I think that we've seen a lot of people who, once they reach positions of power, like our president, have kind of turned their backs on the community that supported them before. And that's an unfortunate thing when it happens. And I think politicians, if we had every politician who had tried marijuana to just actually have a backbone and to stand up and tell the truth they know about pot, then things would change a lot more quickly. I think we're nearing the tipping point anyway, but unfortunately what's holding us back so far is that it seems to take like 70 or 80% support among the general populace for a lot of ideas like this one, like marijuana legalization.
Look at gun control. That's well up there, and they still haven't been able to come up with anything for that.
It's going to take just such an obvious majority that they aren't scared of it anymore.
Yeah. Very good point.
But Steve, we're down to the end of the hour, and I'd love for you to get your information out there, where people can find you and what you have to offer them.
First place to check out is tokesignals.com. That's my personal blog. If you want to check out the biggest cannabis news stories every day, you can find those at hemp.org/news, where I'm the editor of Hemp News, which is the Internet's longest-running compilation of cannabis information. You can check out, if you'd like to read a capsule history of this plant and its relationship with the human race, you can read my book, The Little Black Book of Marijuana. It's available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. All major book retailers can get it for you. And if you're in the Seattle area and the Pacific Northwest, you might want to check out my Toke Signals Marijuana Reviews in the Seattle Weekly and my national news column in Northwest Leaf Magazine.
Wonderful.
Well, that's great, Steve. Yeah, wonderful job, and you're doing a great job. Imagine this all started because you were arrested at age 17 on a marijuana offense.
It's funny how life works that way, huh?
Yeah, it is. It's amazing, and we wish you every success going forward. We've achieved a lot, but like everything else, you just got to keep plugging and keep working and keep pushing forward.
Absolutely. I appreciate the chance to be on the show, guys.
Well, we're glad to have you, Steve. Thank you for being here today. It was great. I learned so much today. It's incredible.
Steve, I'd love for you to come back and give us some more information on this and keep us updated, if you will.
I'd like that a lot.
Great. Good to hear. Gentlemen, it's time to thank the sponsors, of which one is AWOP, A World of Progressive Radio. Please remember awopradio.com and Kim G over there. Doing a great job. She's also got another gig coming up, making music and spinning it out there over the airwaves. So please keep an eye open for it. I want to thank Roundtree7, and that's the number 7.com, our blog, which is Knowledge to the Social Consciousness, and daughtersofisis.com. Take a look over there. Talk about aromatic. That's the fragrant memories of our ancestors, and you never know what you're going to find over there either.
Yeah.
So, gentlemen, thank you for being with me. Steve, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. We'll look forward to next time.
Absolutely.
We got a hell of a chat room going here. People are interested in this topic. A lot of folks listening in, and I want to say thank you to each and every one of the listeners for coming. And look for him again. Steve will be with us again to talk more on this.
Great.
Thanks, Scott.
Look forward to it. Thank you. And Jack Dodell from Saturday Afternoon Post. Keep pushing forward. That's all we can do. And it's the best possible course for us to take.
I'm going to play us off with a little bit of closing music here.
Great.
This has been the Sunday Show with Jack Jodell of Saturday Afternoon Post blog, and Gwen Berry. I'm down here in South Florida. Jack's in Minnesota, and we've got Steve out there on the West Coast doing the good stuff. And thank you for being with us tonight. That's it, guys.
Great. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Jack, we be done.
Hey, sounds great, Gwen. Great show. Boy, I learned a lot today. That was outstanding.
I did, too. I'm glad
you
we
bet. There. Talk to you next week, and hope you continue to feel better.
Thank you, darling.
All right.
Bye,
talk
everybody.
Bye-bye.